Right, so the title then is Religion Only for the Weak. Now, there is a very strong undercurrent in our culture today that says that religion is this pale, insipid thing that is basically just for the weak. You know, it's the opiate for the masses. It's the cup of cocoa for those who are too weak to actually face stark reality so that they can slurp their religion before nodding off into the sweet dream world that is their religion of choice. So basically, if you can't square up and take the meaninglessness of existence on the chin, then hide behind religion. That's the kind of argument. So religion is basically for the mental and emotional chickens. And so the kind of logical implication goes, basically, getting religion of whatever sort means you flush your brain down the loo, hide your head in the sand, and then you get this kind of existential calm. Now, it's actually a very hard question to answer, is religion only for the weak? Because, of course, there are so many religions. And so I suppose maybe there are some religions that are really geared for the weak. I think of, say, certain cults that will prey on the socially excluded and then love bomb them to get them to join. I said, well, maybe that is a religion geared for the weak. I have no problem with that. So fine, maybe there are some religions geared for the weak. But that hasn't actually got you very far in the argument, because you might as well say systems of thought are only for the weak, because I can find an example of one system of thought that is geared for the weak. Well, that's not an argument. So fine, maybe some religions are for the weak, but I want to focus the question and ask what specifically about Christianity. Now, the idea that Christianity is something for the weak is something that has seeped so deep into our culture that it's become a bit more like just mental background noise rather than a specific objection to us today. So now, today, we all just kind of know that Christianity is limp-wristed vicars and mindless happy clapping, right? So let me give you an example. Take last year's film, Beowulf. Do you remember? Did you see it? Beowulf, it was the one where Ray Winston had his body digitally altered from its natural 50-something saggy state to looking, well, a bit more like this. Anyway, all right, not this good. But in the film, in Beowulf, basically paganism is the red-blooded, steak-eating man's man religion. Christianity is for the pasty-faced, twig-limbed nerds. Now, you don't have to have seen the film to recognize that smell. You've probably seen similar things. But the thing is, just the way Ray Winston's body was altered just suggests you there's some tinkering with reality going on in that film. And indeed there was. Beowulf was originally written as a Christian epic, not pagan propaganda at all. And so I want to argue that the idea that Christianity is only for the weak is an urban legend that is as much a distortion of reality as Ray Winston's CGI body. Okay, so why? First of all, why then do I not think Christianity is for the weak? First of all, I don't actually think the argument that Christianity is for the weak is a serious objection. Take something very different. Take Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, or the film. How is Christianity presented in that? In the Da Vinci Code, Christianity is this sinisterly powerful force moving behind the scenes, basically to stifle free thinking. So Christianity is this sinister force that steamrollers opposition, steamrollers authentic spirituality in the name of its own authoritarian agenda. That's Christianity. Now, that idea is also sunk very deep into our culture, right? That Christianity is official authoritarianism. There's orthodoxy, and it just crushes all that's different to it. But the question is, so which is Christianity? Murderous and powerful, or weak and insipid? People will hold both ideas in their heads at the same time, two completely opposite objections to Christianity. They'll hold both ideas. It's powerful, and that it's weak. So I think the reason people will hold both those in their heads is because they're not serious objections. Basically, those are simply smear tactics to edge out of having to deal with the person of Jesus Christ. Christianity is weak is usually just the weak mind's way of edging out of having to face up to the claims of Jesus Christ. Second, now the psychological argument actually cuts both ways. Sigmund Freud's the guy who's most famous on this psychological argument against Christianity. For Freud, you don't have to know much about Freud. Freud, it's all about dads. Everything's about dads. And so, somewhat unsurprisingly for Freud, when he wants to talk about religion, religion's all about dads as well. So, basically, what you want is we all want a father figure, and so we just project this desire for a father figure into heaven, and that's God. Okay? That's Freud's idea. Now think about what Freud's other major theory was, the Oedipus complex. Yeah. Now in the Oedipus complex, we all secretly want to kill our fathers. Now doesn't that make Freud's atheism somewhat suspect? Because put those two together, now what's Freud about? What's his atheism about? He wants to kill his father figure in heaven. Yeah? So the psychological argument is cut right against his atheism. We go, well, we know why you're atheist. You hate a father figure. And let's be honest here. You could just as well say that atheism is for the weak because it fulfills a psychological need. Atheism can be a great comfort in getting rid of the unsettling idea that there might be a God who will assess your life and judge you. Very comforting to get rid of that. And you can be just as much of a weak-minded, mindless atheist as you can be a mindless Christian. So the psychological argument works very strongly against atheism too. So what I want to do is put the lazy smear tactics to one side and get to the actual issue. Because the question of Christianity is not a psychological issue. Because Christianity is not a set of spiritual ideals. Christianity is not like, say, transcendental meditation, where all that matters is on the inside. But Christianity, there's a very different kettle of fish. See, if it were just about spiritual ideals, then you could judge Christianity as to whether it's just a psychological prop for a weak mind. But it's not. Christianity is about the objective, historical person of Jesus Christ. It's all about historical fact. So, was Jesus Christ who he claimed to be? Did Jesus of Nazareth really die and rise from the dead in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago? If he did, Christianity is true. If he didn't, Christianity is false. So to say Christianity is weak, it's a bit like, or to ask, is Christianity weak? It's a bit like asking, was the landing on the moon weak? What? it either happened or it didn't. You can't say, is that weak or not? It's objective fact, true or false. See, Christianity isn't a flavor that some people like and so others don't. Christianity is either true or it's false. Now, okay, think about it. What is the symbol of Christianity? What's the symbol of Christianity? It's not a smiley face or a comfort blanket. The symbol of Christianity is a cross. The symbol of Christianity is the historical cross on which Jesus of Nazareth was executed. Okay, it's a historical claim. And just by the way, Jesus' existence and his death on the cross are things that no serious scholar questions. So we are talking about objective historical fact here. Now, how you deal with the cross completely changes how you deal with Christianity. Because people who say, Christianity, I think that's just something for the weak. People who say that tend to be the same sort of people who will say, so what was Jesus all about then? Jesus, well, he was all about going around telling people to love each other, right? That's what Jesus was all about, going around telling people to love each other. Well, okay, why then did Jesus die? Why was he put to death? Why was he executed? Why? Was Jesus put to death for telling people to love each other? Stop it, he's telling people to be nice. Come on. I mean, even the Romans weren't against that. So, suddenly we've got a problem with what he's about. He can't simply have been about going around telling people to be nice. If Jesus had simply been about going around telling people to love each other, he wouldn't have been executed. He'd now be as dated as the hippies. He'd have been forgotten in 20 years. We'd never have heard of him, if that's all he'd been about. So, why really was Jesus put to death? Well, again, nobody seriously disagrees on this. The reason Jesus of Nazareth was executed was on blasphemy charges. He was executed for claiming to be God, the Lord over all. On the way out, you can grab this, which is the earliest account that we have of the events of Jesus' life and death, Mark's Gospel, written really very soon after the events. And here we read an account during his trial. He's been put on, he's been called up for charges. And we read, the high priest asked Jesus, are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? I am, said Jesus, and you will see the Son of Man, he's referring to himself, you will see me, sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. At this point, the high priest tore his clothes and asked, why do we need any more witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? They all condemned him as worthy of death. So Jesus wasn't just going around telling people to love each other. He was claiming to be God. That's still not the whole picture of what's going on with his death. Because shortly before he was put on trial, he said this. He said, the Son of Man, again, referring to himself, the Son of Man, did not come to be served, but to serve, and get this, to give his life as a ransom for many. Okay, so he says he intends to give his life. So for the official court, they say this is an execution on blasphemy charges. Jesus says he's willingly handing himself over for that. He is laying down his life as a ransom. So what's going on? He's saying it's as if we've all been kidnapped. And a ransom price has to be paid if we're to be set free. Jesus has to die. And that's how Jesus always saw it. Jesus believed, you can read here more and see, that because we've all rejected God, we've all looked to money, to our abilities, to anywhere else, but we've not looked to God for our security. Because we've done that, we deserve and face death. Now, in the face of that problem, that's what Jesus believed. In the face of that problem, if he'd just gone round telling people to love each other, it would be a bit pointless. I mean, it might make life a bit nicer, but it wouldn't actually deal with the fundamental problem of death. And what Jesus says he is about is meeting humanity's most fundamental problem, death. And by death, he means something more than just physical death. He's meaning that because we have rejected God, God will reject us. That's the full meaning of death. And Jesus says he's going to give his life to take our death. He's going to stand in our place and die so that we can be free. He's going to be rejected with the rejection we should have so that we can be free. He's the ransom price for us. Now, when you get that's what's on Jesus' mind as he's heading to trial, you see, now that is an objective, universal need that Jesus is seeking to meet. So Jesus is not offering some sort of spiritual Prozac for the melancholy. This is a need that everyone has. I mean, however many sophisticated games we play, we all face the finality of death, which is ultimately what Jesus is seeking to meet. He will take that death. Now, just because Jesus is seeking to meet a need doesn't mean that to accept his offer is a psychological defense mechanism. It doesn't mean that at all. Because we all have a number of basic needs. We all need food. We all need water. We all need air. Is it weak to eat, to drink, to breathe? Oh, of course not. It's human to do those things. And so it is with Jesus, who deals with something even more fundamental, who seeks to deal with death and our relationship with God. That was a fundamental problem. Now, you can question whether Jesus' offer to do that is true. And that is a great thing to do. Check out whether it's true. And in fact, can I recommend, there's a meet you can go to, it should be something like this on your seat. Tonight there's a meeting where you can do precisely that. Check out whether it's true. But to say that this is weak is just to miss the point of what it's about. In fact, I think we can turn the tables here. I think we can say it is weak not to accept Jesus. It's weak not to accept Jesus for a couple of reasons. First of all, let's be honest, we all naturally do use psychological crutches to get through life. Some booze their troubles away. Some sleep around to feel love. Others just look for thrills. Others just hang out with a certain crowd so they can feel in and, same, feel loved. others just cram their lives with thrills, busyness, money, whatever, so they simply don't have time. They crowd out the ability to think about ultimate reality deliberately. But you see, Jesus is offering the perfect solution to all of those needs. He promises to forgive us, to wipe away the guilt that plagues us. He calls us into a relationship with a living God that he says is going to meet our deepest need for unconditional love. He offers to deal with our greatest problem of death, to make us what we are always meant to be, to give us an eternity of joy. Now, you should only reject that offer if it's a false offer. And so, I mean, just to reject a cure because it's a cure, it's plain stupid. So, unless you have proven Jesus false, and I challenge anyone to do so, unless you've done that, then you are weak if you just run after the cheap substitutes of booze and sleeping around to try to mask those basic needs that you have with your fake friendships or whatever. Because then you are simply masking this deep need that you're admitting you have through your actions, a need that Jesus claims he can meet. The other reason I think it could be weak not to accept Jesus is this. The reality is, everyone in here has certain hurts and needs. We all have needs. To cover those up and pretend you don't have them, that is escapism. So, oh sure, you can turn to religion to escape reality. Sure, people can do that. But you can be just as much of an escapist by burying your head in the sand and pretending that you don't have needs and that there isn't an offer to deal with those needs worth investigating. It's escapism. That's weak. So to investigate Jesus, that is facing up to reality. And if his offer is valid, then to accept it is strong, but to turn away is to be the mental or emotional chicken. Okay, one last point. We've seen that calling Christianity weak can just be the weak mind's smear tactic to edge out of having to deal with Jesus Christ and his claims. We've seen that the psychological argument can cut both ways against atheism as much as any religion. And we've seen that in Christianity's case, it's actually beside the point, because Christianity is not a psychological question. It's about objective historical fact, so it's either true or it isn't. And it deals with needs that we all have. It's not just particular needs for the weak-minded. But lastly, I want to show that calling Christianity weak, or just for the weak, is simply ignorant of history and how Christianity is today. You see, Jesus Christ calls his followers to courageously stand up for a way of life and for a reality that goes often radically against our culture, and that can be painful. And I'm talking about more than just social exclusion, tough though that can be. I know people whose entire families have completely disowned them because they've become a Christian. But I'm talking about something worse than that. I'm talking about Christians dying for their faith. And down through the centuries, since the time of ancient Rome, countless Christians have been often horrifically tortured and killed simply for being Christian. Now, as they are being tortured, if they had rejected their Christianity, the torture would stop and they would have been free. but they didn't. Why? And it's not just history. More Christians have been killed for their faith in the last century than in all the other centuries put together. If you are a Christian in a country like China or Saudi Arabia today, you put your life on the line every day. Now, those Christians might be wrong, but they are not weak. Let me read you a description of a Christian who was sentenced to be burned alive for his faith in London in the 16th century. His name was John Rogers. Here's the account. Rogers was then led forth to Smithfield on foot. By the wayside stood his wife and children. He just saw them, but was hardly allowed to stop. And then he walked on calmly to the stake. An immense crowd lined the street and filled every available spot in Smithfield. Men could hardly believe that someone would actually give their body to be burned for their religion. But when they saw John Rogers walking steadily and unflinchingly into a fiery grave, the enthusiasm of the crowd knew no bounds. They rent the air with thunders of applause. Even Noailles, the French ambassador who actually supported Rogers' execution, wrote home a description of the scene and said that Rogers went to death, quote, as if he was walking to his wedding. Rogers was not weak. His Christianity was not weak. No, because of Jesus' promise to take him safely through death, Rogers had an expectation that made him supernaturally strong. It is the strong thing to do, to face reality and investigate Jesus' claims and offers. And if, like John Rogers, you do end up accepting Jesus' claims and offers, then you too will have this extraordinary strength that can see you through fire and death. Well, let's have a time for some questions now. We've got a few minutes. Any questions? Yeah. Who was doing the execution of John Rogers? Yeah, basically it was... It was a choice between Roman Catholicism and Protestantism, but that doesn't deny the point. He's dying with that strength for his faith. Now, there are some technical issues about what's behind the persecution in the 1550s. That's beside the point. He's dying for his faith. Doesn't matter. No. In face of his death, he's given a strength that you would not have without Jesus Christ. That's my only point. All right? Yeah. Yeah. Sure. But that's not weak. Again, I have a limited point. Sorry, people kill themselves for their religion all the time, but they can be deluded. So I'm just repeating for the recording. Sure, absolutely fine. I mean, Rogers could be totally deluded, could have been totally wrong, absolute fruitcake, but he wasn't weak. That's the limited agenda we're dealing with right here. We could move on to say what he deluded, but certainly wasn't weak.